Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
This episode of the Gegenpressing Podcast is brought to you by BetOnline. BetOnline is your number one source for all your summer sports this season, from MLB, golf, NBA, and NHL playoff stats. All the latest stats, news, and scores available to follow your favorite teams. Get the latest odds and lines, including the latest team matchup, player props, and odds on just about every sport out there. Head to the website today or use your mobile device to get in on the action. BetOnline, where the game starts.
Hello and welcome to Gegenpressing. Yes, this is a live show, or as live as we can possibly be, with Stefan Bielkowski and Matt Ford. And first, and we need to go to you, Matt, right away. I asked before we went on the show, how often have you been showered by beer? And you pointed out you're in Leverkusen and not in Munich, but let us know, how's it been there? Like, what's the atmosphere like? The TV pictures look incredible, Matt.
Yeah, I'm not sure the game actually, strictly speaking, finished. Florian Wirtz's first goal was greeted by a pitch invasion. The fans by that point were already out of the terrace behind the goal, waiting to jump over the appetizing audience. I believe when I saw Wirtz's celebration, he's actually, you know, disappears into the crowd before trying to push them all back on his own. It's like, what, one man against 20,000. And then by the time he scores a similar goal to make it four, I think by that point, the ref decided, even though I think there were probably 30 seconds left to play. Yeah, the whistle was blown, and it's an historic moment. I don't think, no one saw it coming even 18 months ago. Xabi Alonso was only in the job for 16 months. It's been an incredible period. The Leverkusen fans were all singing, "We'll never be German champions," which is, of course, an ironic reworking of what's always been sung at them. Ever since the late 90s, early 2000s, Bayer Leverkusen, German champions. It sounds strange. It's going to take a bit of getting used to, I think. But as we've said time and time again on these new podcasts, absolutely deserved. And today they continued where they left off, despite six changes. Xabi Alonso's main thoughts, it seems, actually on the Europa League quarter-final second leg. And yet, the likes of Adli and Hoffmann slipped into the team as if they'd never really been out. And they're debating we're no top opposition. But yeah, fantastic atmosphere, fans all piling onto the pitch. I'm in the mixed zone now. I'm not entirely sure where the Leverkusen players and staff have got to. Half of the players were still crowd surfing outside, so I'm not sure if they've all been rescued yet. And last I saw, the stewards were trying to push the fans away from the tunnel a little bit, I think maybe to make some space for the players, and Xabi Alonso couldn't go back out perhaps. But like I said, I can't really see that exactly where I am. You probably have a better view on TV.
Yeah, I see Granit Xhaka is safe. He's speaking right now. He is soaked in beer and he's wearing some sort of jersey.
So is Florian Wirtz, it seems. Also seems to have been rescued despite his heroic attempts to hold the crowd back, which is impressive. And what a way to do it. It's in typical Leverkusen fashion, particularly Wirtz's long-range finish and Xhaka's long-range finish. What more perfect way to do it? I thought also a nice word for Victor Boniface as well. Fantastic to see him opening the scoring after he was arguably the star man, arguably even in the entire league in the first half of the season, going head to head with Sergio Garcia, having Kane, and then, you know, disappointingly injured before AFCON, missing the second half of the season, but now back in the starting lineup and got put the penalty away to get Leverkusen up and running today. Yeah, nice moments for him. Leverkusen is, as you both know, you've both been here, And with all due respect, it's a different sort of place. It's a slightly strange sort of place. The city and the club get accused of a lot of things, you know, being plastic, being a factory team, being exempt from 50+1, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And there's a lot of truth in that. But then again, they all own it. You won't find anyone here who tries to beat around the bush or disown any of that. It's very much their badge of honour. They stand by it. They're all singing about the Bayer-Kreuz, the Bayer-Cross, the symbol of the pharmaceutical company that historically has run this entire city. And it's a unique tradition. And I think, ultimately, on balance, I think it's a good thing. I think it's a nice thing. I think it's a unique thing. And it's a fantastic atmosphere. I think and they all deserve it, from fans to players to staff. There's no two ways about it.
Yeah, Matt, I'm going to age myself terribly here because this kind of reminded me when Dortmund won it in 94-95, because Dortmund had to wait such a long time between that title and the one previously, right? And the way the fans rushed onto the field and how emotional it was. We've seen Platzsturm, as they call it in German, all the time, but this one seemed in particular special. What's it been like around the city today?
Admittedly, I got here relatively late. I was doing a half marathon this morning. But from the photos that I've seen. Oh, by the way, it's a great point. Obviously, now Leverkusen have got themselves over the finish line as well. But if I give you that one. But yeah, electric atmosphere outside. I've seen the footage, like everyone else probably has, of the team bus arriving. I believe the bus stop or the street outside was renamed Xavi Alonso Allee. There's a banner. There's a banner out in the crowd on the pitch at the moment. This basically just says King Xavi. And yeah, there's been very Spanish. What it sounds like, quite nationalistic sounding Spanish songs, Viva España. And I'm pretty sure he's Basque, but I'm not going to get into that. I'm not going to get into that potential political controversy. But I'm sure the intention is right on the part of the Bayer Leverkusen DJ. So yeah, like I said, it's a unique place. There's an absolutely unique sense of community, togetherness in Leverkusen, which has its, like I say, its own unique tradition, its own unique history, its own unique roots, and they all live by it. And this is a moment for them and those fans out on the pitch and celebrating. This is their big moment for their little city.
Yeah, Stefan, I don't know if you want to jump in here. Do you have any more thoughts for Matt here, or should we let him go and celebrate?
I think we probably should let him go, because he's probably going to have to try and rugby tackle a Leverkusen player at some point. But yeah, only just to add that the scenes that we've seen from the television have just been incredible. The live international feed have kind of allowed people to just kind of let the feed run without commentary over the top or without adverts over the top, and it seems like all of the world football is watching this game right now. So it's great to have Matt there. It's great to have him on hand to kind of explain what's going on, what's been going on in the city. And yeah, I don't know if there's anything else you want to add, Matt, before we probably let you go and see if you can grab anyone in the mix zone.
I'll see what I can do. I'm just watching now. Simon Reuters has just come through. He's been greeted by, I'm assuming, his family, daughters. He's the centre of attention. Lots of shouting, lots of bugging going on. So some of the staff do seem to have escaped the melee and like gradually seeping through into the mix zone. It was interesting to see like what sort of stages it went through today, because at one point it was like chants of only SVB, so SVB, SV Bayer, are going to be German champions. That came out. And then they got a bit braver after another goal when all the cardboard cutout Bundesliga trophies came out on the terrace. Next thing you know, there's a big Deutscher Meister, German champion banner painted by the ultras on the fence. And now there's chants of Campioni going around the tunnel area. So, yeah, and they've still got 5 games to go, and they can concentrate on the Europa League and the German Cup now. I don't think this story's over yet.
Yeah, I would agree with that. All right, Matt, we're going to let you go. So curious to get more feedback from you later this week. I'm sure we're going to talk very, very soon. Thanks for jumping on and good luck.
Nice one. Cheers, lads. Bye-bye.
Yeah, that was great. Stefan, I can't really put it in any other words. Obviously, little bit of delay on our side here with him coming through, but him doing on the phone and all that. But all right, we heard from Matt. The live feed on DAZN is still running, and kudos to the Bundesliga to just keep going, you know, just let it run, let people enjoy it, try to have people there. I remember in the past when broadcasts like that would be abroad, they would just cut off and they would go to the studio and whatever. And I think this is far more enjoyable. As I look to my TV on the right here and I still see Leverkusen fans on the pitch. Both you and I had a lot of chances to be with this Leverkusen team over the last few months under Xabi Alonso. You were there recently. You spoke to Xabi Alonso. What's your thoughts now on this being this first chapter of the season? There's two more chapters to it, we think, right? What's your thought on this first chapter being concluded pretty early on?
Yeah, I mean, I can only really echo what Matt said in terms of like the kind of importance of this day. It's historical, obviously, but I think what's probably quite touching is just when you see how much it means to the fans on the pitch. You know, it's one thing to, you know, say, oh, well, you know, there's a new league champion. And, you know, I tweeted out kind of tongue in cheek that it's the first time in 4,028 days that a German champion has been anyone but Bayern Munich. And, you know, that's all well and good. But at the end of the day, football is, you know, it's traded on the emotions of the fans, and seeing those fans, you know, line the pitch just before full time is when I started to kind of feel, you know, quite emotional, to be perfectly honest with you. And I actually said in our subscriber chat to the subscribers actually just after full time that those scenes of Florian Wirtz kind of getting dragged through the crowd, and seemingly everyone in Leverkusen wants to pat him on the back or hug him or kiss him on the cheek. It felt like those kind of old videos you see of, you know, Diego Maradona winning the World Cup or Pele winning the World Cup. And I know that's obviously huge comparisons, you know, but it feels like, I don't mean to say that this is as impressive as, you know, Pele winning the World Cup or something, but it's when you're watching something, you realize you're watching history unfold, and you realize you're going to be seeing these clips for years and years and decades to come. And that's what kind of made it so special. And it was such a kind of perfect afternoon for Leverkusen, the way they won, the way the Wirtz got that hat trick, the way that they played. You know, it was Leverkusen through and through, and that's exactly what we expected of them this season. It was just a wonderful kind of carnival and celebration of football, to be perfectly honest with you. And as Matt said, a wonderful, you know, refute of the accusations that Leverkusen often have to put up with, that they're not a real club, that they're a plastic side. I saw some people on social media complaining that others who don't follow the league were kind of comparing Leverkusen to Leipzig and, you know, saying they're just one of these plastic clubs. And, you know, a lot of people have pushed back on that. And I think today was a perfect example of that. I must admit, like, I don't want to define Leverkusen's success by comparing them to another club, but I was at the Allianz Arena last season when Bayern won the title, and I was at the title celebrations. And, you know, I hope this doesn't really come across as a slight or a dig at Bayern, but there was no pitch invasion, there was no fans lining the stadium, there was no fans in tears. And of course that's obviously going to be the case because Bayern are serial winners, but it's something that I thought of when I was kind of watching those Leverkusen fans, and that's the kind of beauty of it. And that's what makes football so magical, that from time to time we do get these teams who've never won something like this, and you can tell that wow, those people are quite literally living like the best days of their life, you know, or one of the best days of their life. And yeah, it was just, it's exactly why we love football. It's exactly why we love German football. Big shout out to the OG Bundesliga fans who've had to put up with us for the last 11 years. Even Bayern fans in our group, in our subscriber chat, you know, congratulating Leverkusen and saying this was necessary. So I mean, I'm sure we'll get into the kind of ramifications and what this means for German football going forward, but yeah, it's a great day for Leverkusen, a great day for German football, I think.
Yeah, I put tongue-in-cheek into the subscriber chat that the reign of terror is now over. And that sounds harsh because, like, I don't think Bayern Munich, you know, all ships rise with the tide is a really good saying here. I think the rest of the league being good and better and challenging Bayern Munich will ultimately benefit Bayern Munich as well, right? Because they now have to rethink a lot of things after this season, finally, because I think they got away a few times with winning the title too easily, and they will be the first to admit it. So I'm not being unfair here, I don't think. And so I think this, they will be the first to say, hey, this is actually good for us. It's good for the product that we represent, the Bundesliga. They will take on that challenge. They will have to think outside of the box because it will be more difficult for them than past challenges, because this Leverkusen team is likely going to stay together now with Alonso staying, right? I think even someone like Frimpong might stay now. So this is really good. And I also, you know, I want to address some of these Leverkusen stereotypes about them being a company team and all that. That's true. They are, you know, they were also founded in 1904, and a big part of German history is that the industrialization came a little later than in other European countries, right? And that a lot of the infrastructures and cities that have football teams today were built around that time, and that's also when you see it, a lot of the foundations of football teams. And while Leverkusen is in a smaller town, right, a company town, a town that was literally built to house the Bayer factories at the turn of the century, that story of them as a company team is actually quite common in German football. So, you know, there is tradition in that as well. And I mean, don't want to talk about Leipzig today, but even that is something that has historical anchorship in Germany and in German history. But just stick with Leverkusen, I think you have to remember that you know, even teams like Dortmund, Bochum, Schalke, all of these teams in one way or another were associated with industry, you know, and some of these places aren't much bigger than Leverkusen is today. So I think it's not quite fair to give them this kind of, to put that stamp on them. On top of that, it isn't like that Leverkusen in the Bundesliga are a new scenario either. I mean, they've been around since the 70s in the Bundesliga, right? And on top of that, they have won, right? This is the one thing that we forget about this narrative, but they have won stuff in the past, you know, 94, the Pokal, then of course in 1988, the UEFA Cup, but now the Europa League. So, you know, they have finally won that one that has always defined them as Vizekosen, which is the German championship. And that was the one trophy missing. And it's the trophy that their local rivals all around him have them. You know, I remember I went on a Leverkusen media trip and Chris Williams and I headed over to Gladbach to do a Europa League game, and there was a trophy case with the German championship. We took a photo and put it into the Leverkusen chat to make fun of it. Gone, we can't do that anymore because Leverkusen now have one as well, right? So that was the one that was missing. And I think we need to put this company team narrative a little bit to bed. And we also have to remember that Bayer isn't fully funding this team anymore either. They're a sponsor, right? And they helped the team, but it isn't like in the 90s where they were 80% of the budget. That isn't the case today anymore. They have to be very much self-sustainable in a lot of ways. And they're also a team with a big membership as well. I mean, this isn't a small team anymore. So I kind of wanted to put those narratives, not necessarily to rest, but put them in proper historic context, because I think that's important here. And then also, and I noticed this today a lot, when they were going around, and the images are still on the television, and when they were showing a lot of people holding up those scars from the 2001-2002 season, you know, when they reached the Champions League final and they lost to Real Madrid and they lost the title to Borussia Dortmund and in the last minute. And of course, 2 years prior, they lost it to Bayern Munich. It does this harrowing defeat at Unterhaching, you know. And there's people there that remember that to this day. And I think they can finally put those ghosts to rest. And I think when you see the faces of these people celebrating and being in tears, yeah, that's legit, Stefan. And I think it's well deserved. And I think it's going to put the Bundesliga in a really interesting place now over the next few months. And I mean, it's we can probably go into that analysis over the next few weeks in greater detail when we know the numbers. But this is also a year where they have to, you know, where they're in contract discussions about the new television contract, the national television contract, which is the one that pays the big bucks, right? So
I think this is good. This is a good day for German football.
Yeah, it is. And yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, the whole company club thing is quite bizarre from an international point of view, because in the UK, just about every football club was born out of a factory floor somewhere. And, you know, a lot of them kind of shook off their kind of links to the local teams. But, you know, just about every club, but at least kind of big club in Scotland and England and Wales, can, you know, pull their history back to a local, you know, factory or coal mine or something. So the fact that Leverkusen
train workers
are
for Man United, right? Rail
yeah,
workers.
Exactly. Yeah. So I mean, I actually think it's something that Leverkusen trade on quite a lot internationally, because they realize that, you know, it's something that's far more common abroad. But yeah, and the only other thing that's worth mentioning, which I'm sure most people listen to this podcast know, but a lot of people won't, is that no team has finished second in the Bundesliga more often than Leverkusen. You know, and we've talked about this before in the on the pod, and how when I went out to speak to the club and speak to Xabi Alonso, people at the club would bring it up often. You know, and I kind of thought to myself, like, it's an odd thing for a club to kind of wear as a badge of honour, but it's almost as if that's the one thing that they have to celebrate. And, you know, they do have that Pokal trophy sitting in the lobby in the club in honour, and you know, it's an honourable thing, but it's a club that's been starved almost of the success that it really should be getting, considering the kind of financial might and financial size of the club in the grand scheme of things. So this title, you know, quite literally transforms the club, I think, from one club to another almost overnight. And if you kind of want to look at it from a wider German football point of view, it's fascinating, because, you know, we had a situation where for the last kind of, you know, for the best part of 10 years, we've had, as you said, Bayern at times being outstanding and deserving of the league title, and at times not at their best, but able to take advantage of, you know, poor opposition in the league. And that's often been defined by Dortmund's struggles. But I think, to be perfectly honest with you, I think Leipzig probably deserve just as much of that criticism. And I was talking about this during the game, actually, and I think it's really important. And I actually wrote an article in Transfermarkt kind of looking at why or how Leverkusen were able to kind of build the squad for Xabi Alonso. And I think that's a really important thing that has to be kind of highlighted today, because, you know, Alonso only arrived, what, 5 or 6 weeks into last season. But I think, if I'm not mistaken, I think the stat I said, that 8 of his 11 most used players this season were players who were at the club before he joined. So, you know, it's not as if Leverkusen were able to kind of sign him up, thought, wow, he's a good head coach, let's go sign him a new squad of players that will win a league title. He arrived with the intention of, or with the direct task of making the players who were there better, or in Leverkusen's eyes, getting the best out of what they thought these players were capable of, which, as we've now seen, is exactly what he's done there. And, you know, you can look at all the numbers on Transfermarkt, which, of course, I've already done, so I'm happy to kind of talk through them. But, you know, this entire Leverkusen squad cost £226 million, euros, which, you know, Dortmund's cost 312, Leipzig's cost 322, Bayern's cost 475. But I think the difference between Leverkusen and most notably Dortmund and Leipzig is that in the last 5 years, Dortmund have made £557 million from player sales. Leipzig have made £628 million from player sales. Leverkusen have only made £292 million. And that's been on purpose, really, because, you know, as I kind of said, you could easily see a situation where Frimpong could have went last summer, or Tupsoba or Hincapie. And yeah, I know they've sold players over the years. Havertz obviously moved on, and Leon Bailey and Moussa Diaby. But more often than not, Leverkusen have always made sure that they're limited to one player a season if they can. And actually, often in most cases, they usually move a player on only when they're quite comfortable that they've got replacements in place. So, for example, Diaby was sold because they knew they basically no longer needed them in that squad. So if you compare that to what's happened at Leipzig this season, where they've sold three massive players, of course, Dortmund are no strangers to that as well, where they just kind of will happily just sell off the spine of their team if they can get the right price for it. And I think it's almost, you know, I don't know, maybe I'm just being a big nerd about it, but I actually almost think what Leverkusen are doing off the pitch is actually more interesting, maybe may have longer implications for German football than what Xabi Alonso has done on it, because yes, they're playing possession football, yes, they're winning games, but what Leverkusen have actually shown over the last kind of 12 or 18 months is that there's a different way to build football squads in the Bundesliga, and it isn't based around always selling your players every year and then coming up short against Bayern. You know, they've shown that, you know, you can actually hold on to your key players for a little longer than you usually would. And if you get the right head coach in place, it's not that hard. Well, I mean, it's obviously extremely hard, and, you know, Leverkusen put a lot of effort into it, but they've shown it's possible to challenge Bayern Munich and win a league title with a squad that cost, you know, maybe a half or a third of what Bayern paid for them. So I think that's a really interesting long-term implication of what happened here at Leverkusen, and whether the likes of Leipzig and Dortmund will look at that and think, you know, maybe us selling our players every year is good for the bank balance, but it's not actually good for German football.
This episode of the Gegenpressing Podcast is brought to you by BetOnline. BetOnline is your number one source for all your summer sports this season, from MLB, golf, NBA, and NHL playoff stats. All the latest stats, news, and scores available to follow your favorite teams. Get the latest odds and lines, including the latest team matchup, player props, and odds on just about every sport out there. Head to the website today or use your mobile device to get in on the action. BetOnline, where the game starts.
Yeah, I think Leverkusen, maybe, especially over Dortmund, have Leipzig not so much, because that's a great city. It's a beautiful place to live in. But Leverkusen may have an advantage over Dortmund in terms of where they're located. And that, I don't mean this city of Leverkusen, I mean Düsseldorf, which is right next to it, where the majority of the players live. I always remember this when the Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang rumors started that he was wanting to leave. And a source at Dortmund said to me, "Is like, look, he's the only one in Dortmund who drives a gold-plated Lamborghini or whatever he drove at the time, right?" Everyone who knows Dortmund knows what I mean with the statement, right? In Düsseldorf, you can drive a gold-plated Lamborghini and you will not...
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Big out, because it's like one of the richest cities in Germany, right? It's very similar to Munich that way. And Munich has this massive advantage over every other German city that it is an incredible place to live. It's a high living standard, and the players are left alone when they walk the city streets, right? Bastian Schweinsteiger famously played football with his friends in the English Garden, and people would just leave him alone, right? Düsseldorf has that too. And I think that is actually one of those soft factors that you have to really consider here, that you can hang on to players a little longer because they can live in a place like Düsseldorf and, you know, live the high society life that a lot of other places don't have. And I mean, that doesn't hurt that the team in Düsseldorf, although they're on a promotion spot, regularly shoot themselves in the foot, so you don't have a competition there. But that is a really strong factor here that gives Leverkusen, I don't even know what you want to call it, an infrastructure edge maybe over Dortmund. Leipzig have this too. I mean, Leipzig is an absolute stunning place to live, and it's a very rich, it's one of the few East German cities that have really benefited from the fall of the Berlin Wall, and there's big companies that are settled there. So it's quite common to see fancy cars in the street there and the shopping mall, and it's, you know, it's really beautifully restored and all that sort of stuff. Leipzig have that too, where it's a place where players want to be, right? And that helps, I think, a little bit with wanting to build a squad, and also telling someone like Florian Wirtz, hey, look, your family is close by, you can stay here for a few more years. I mean, I think one of the big factors too is Xabi Alonso is really comfortable there, right? Like, he didn't feel the need to move on because he lives in a place that he's comfortable with. And then he goes to a workplace where he's left alone because, like, yeah, you work and live in Düsseldorf, but you work in Leverkusen where there isn't that big of a presence as there is in the big cities, right? So I think that is actually quite an important factor here, and I think it helps them build this team and also keep these players together. And I think another person who we really need to mention here, and having been able to do this and maybe selling these players on this project as well, and selling Javi Alonso on this, is Simon Rolfes, who I think about 16 months or so ago, we had him on this podcast and quite pointedly asked him, like, hey, look, what's going on with trophies? What does it take to challenge Bayern? And I have to kind of listen back to it myself. It'd be interesting to listen back to it now that they actually done it and dethroned Bayern Munich, right? But he is such an important factor in this, because at the end of the day, he built the squad. He chose Javi Alonso, made a really difficult decision to fire Gerardo Simeone, right? A head coach who he really believes in and probably still believes in, and still made that really tough decision, and then think outside the box to bring someone in who wasn't really on anyone else's radar at the time, and you know, led to all of this. So there's a lot of focus on Javi Alonso and the way he has worked at this club, but we have to also remember there's a lot of people at Bayer Leverkusen that do a fantastic job, like Fernando Caro, the CEO. Would Alonso be there without him? I don't think so, because Fernando Caro is German-Spanish, right? He has a really deep connection in Spain, and he has that ability to pluck people from there. There's a lot of different things that just went right here, and it isn't just Alonso, I think, that is something that needs to be considered here.
Yeah, it's an interesting club, because whenever you go there and you speak to people, you realize they, unlike a lot of clubs in Germany, they're not just kind of regional, you know, football administrators or ex-players who've just kind of worked their way up, and they say, you know, I grew up in Dortmund, I played for Dortmund, so I now work at Dortmund, and my job is to continue that kind of platform and continue that kind of process. And, you know, you could talk about Caro, you could even talk about Jonas Bolt, for example, who was obviously, I guess, the best way of describing him is maybe as the predecessor to, you know, Simon Rolfes, I guess. He had a very international look as well. And, you know, he very strong focus on South American football, for example. As you mentioned, Caro, I've interviewed Caro before talking about the Bundesliga international rights, and he's been very forthright. He's been very ambitious. He said, look, I know how much Spanish football's getting in America. That's where German football has to work. And yeah, you could argue, like, well, you know, German football's doing what it can, but the fact that he has that ambition to say, I'm not content with what we have, I want to make German football the best in the world, is clear. And just about everyone you speak to Leverkusen's not from Leverkusen. They're all specialists who've been brought to the club, you know, because because, you know, obviously Leverkusen are a very well run club. They make enough money that they can be attractive in terms of wages, but everyone's there because they want to work there. And I think that itself kind of gives them a very outward looking view, whereas a lot of clubs in German football, even still, despite all the money that's involved, can come across as quite parochial, or can come across as, yeah, we have 60,000 fans coming to the stadium and we play the Champions League, but we're just this club and we're here for this town. And don't get me wrong, like, that's obviously part of the charm of German football, and it's a very important part, and 50+1 and blah, blah, blah. But you'd want the people who are actually making the calls at the clubs to have a more international outlook, who can think outside the box. And point to Javi Alonso's perfect example of that. But as you said, the squad that Leverkusen have put together before he even arrived, and that was largely down to Simon Rolfes, is a team full of players from all over Europe, all over the world, you know, kind of plucked from smaller clubs. And it's meant that Leverkusen have been able to kind of just put together a fantastic squad and bring in a fantastic head coach. And, you know, we've talked about it in the season, we've talked about it on this podcast before, in terms of the kind of culture around Leverkusen, the lack of attention they get, the lack of kind of limelight there. There's no feverish local media at like there is at Munich or at Dortmund, or frankly even at Cologne, to be perfectly honest with you, where there's five Cologne or six kind of grizzled old school journalists in the front row giving the head coach grief at every press conference. It's just not really what happens there. And I mean, I'm just trying to think of an example, but like when I did go visit the club, you know, we were there to kind of watch the team train, and before we did some media stuff, and, you know, Leverkusen's training ground is right next to the stadium, and it's clear fences, fans can come and go if they want, they can sit and watch the training regimes for as long as they want. And In this particular instance, actually, it was actually during the international break, so it was really just Xabi Alonso and like 7 or 8 players doing drills, and I don't think there's a single fan there. You know, there's maybe 1 or 2, I think, who maybe tried to get shirts signed, but if you then look at like Bayern or something, or Dortmund, where, I mean, in particular Bayern, who have to put up hedges and fences to kind of hide rival scouts and things like that,
Even my club, 1860, is a zoo every training session.
Yeah.
It's a third division team.
Yeah, it's so... And like, and the thing is, like, rival fans like to make fun of Leverkusen for that, like, oh, you don't have any fans, you don't even go to the training ground and things like that. But that's exactly what a professional like Xabi Alonso wants. He wants to have the time and space to train properly without the fans at the sideline. He wants to be able to kind of work in peace without having 20... beat reporters, you know, barking at him after every press conference, and it's obviously what the fans, it's obviously what the players appreciate as well, you know, and I think that's something that Leverkusen sell themselves on quite well in the industry of football, where they say to players, and of course they say to Xabi Alonso, that hey, you can come here, you're not going to get the same kind of heat that you'll get from playing for Dortmund or Bayern or, you know, Frankfurt or Hamburg or whatever else, or Schalke or whoever else, but bigger clubs will notice you can move on eventually, and the same works for head coaches. And I think that it's all just, it's a lot of people doing a lot of good work, I guess, what I'm trying to say. You know, it's a club that's been working towards the potential for winning the league title, and finally everything kind of clicked. I think, you know, we you can go back and listen to our episodes when, you know, Gerardo Sione was at the club, and we talked a lot about it, and the feel of the club was, look, we've put together a squad that really should be challenging for top four at the very least. You know, they thought, we've got a squad that should be challenging for Dortmund for second place, Leipzig for second place. For some reason, it's just not working. So Gerardo Sione had to go. Sure enough, next head coach comes in, he gets it right, and they win a league title. And I guess what I'm trying to say here is that Xabi Alonso deserves a huge amount of praise there, but you also have to appreciate a lot of hard work that went in so that Alonso could arrive on day one and inherit a squad that more or less was capable of challenging for a league title if it had the right coach in place, which it did.
Yeah, and I mean, the job isn't done yet, Stefan. Xabi Alonso said this in a press conference, I think it was yesterday, that they did the pregame press conference, and I know there was no holding back. He asked the fans not to storm the pitch because they still needed the pitch until the end of the season, because obviously it's still very early. There's still 5 Bundesliga games left. The Pokal final will be in Berlin, so don't need the pitch for that. But hopefully there's going to be a couple more home. Well, I guess there's only going to be one more home game in the Europa League if they beat West Ham. But, you know, they still need the pitch. And also, you know, I think it was just about keeping the focus up. Because it very much feels like, okay, we've won this, but yeah, this will obviously be already one of the greatest moments in the history of the club. But we are in such the way we've conducted ourselves, the way we've played, we really should be winning 3 titles this year. And it kind of feels like job is only a third done now. And that is maybe, you know, there's this big game now in London, although the way West Ham played that first leg, do we really think that they can pull anything off there? I wouldn't be too optimistic for them, but you never know, right? You still have to play those 90 minutes on the pitch. And then on top of that, you know, there's the final against Kaiserslautern. Who knows where they're going to be, but you still have to win those 90 minutes on the pitch. And it is so interesting how he just tries to keep this level up for the next 5 games. And I mean, the other thing that he's saying is like, hey, we want to finish the season unbeaten. No one has ever done that in German football, which I think is really smart, because that kind of creates this sense of competitiveness among the players, because, you know, you could be now in a situation from now till the end of May, which is like over a month away now, where you don't really have anything to play for, right? And so you want to kind of keep that level of competitiveness up. But I guess really the question now that remains is like, when they win the treble, or if they win the treble, or if even the, you know, just with this one title, what are we going to see next year? I'm just so curious because I don't even know if Frimpong is going to leave now at this stage. If the squad can be kept together, the television money is significantly more. If I posted into the Substack chat, Bayern Munich received 90 million euros last year. Leverkusen received about 75. I suspect it will be significantly more. Bayern will still get the most because it's a three-year period, right, that determines the television ranking in German football. But you get extra money for winning the title. The Europa League at this stage gets really interesting financially, right? Around the quarterfinal stage, if you then advance, you can make a good 40, 60 million euros from that competition as well. What I'm trying to say is you don't really need to sell. So what's next? Are we talking them winning the Champions League next year? And we have to remember, they have almost done it before in the history.
Yeah, they have. I mean, the interesting thing is that when I did speak to people at the club back in the end of last year about, you know, Alonso staying or going and Florian Wirtz staying and going and things like that, the thing that they kind of joked about was, well, the worst thing that could happen for us is we win the league title, because then all of a sudden, you know, there's a bunch of players who've decided, well, we've done everything we can at this club. It's time to move on. Xabi Alonso included. But what's actually ended up happening is that obviously Alonso's committed himself to the club. Florian Wirtz has committed himself to the club. You know, his father came out recently and said he's not going anywhere. And as you said, there's a good chance a lot of these players will stick around. And I think that's really kind of borne out the fact that, yes, they'll probably go on and win the Pokal. They could challenge and potentially even win the Europa League. But they've now got this incredible new frontier, which is, of course, the Champions League. And I suspect that Alonso will want to have a good shot at that before he moves on. I think a lot of the players will as well. Of course, they'll also want to kind of keep stay competitive in the Bundesliga. They want to keep this league title. They want to defend this league title. And wasn't that long ago actually that we kind of talked about trying to remember what game it was after. It was maybe after one of the European games we were kind of talking about the kind of state of the kind of top four clubs in German football right now. It might have been after one of the Dortmund games, because I think we're talking about in respect to Edin Terzic's future. But if you're Xabi Alonso right now, or if you're Simon Rolfes, or you're Castro, or just anyone of the kind of big players of Leverkusen, and you're looking across the rest of German football, yes, of course, there's Stuttgart, and you'd imagine they could get better, and Sebastian Hoeneß can continue growing, and you know they could end up being a genuine powerhouse in German football if they can keep a hold of their players. But you look at Bayern, they haven't sorted their head coach out. That squad needs a huge upheaval. It's got a lot of problems that Thomas Tuchel hasn't fixed. And if anything, if he does anything in the Champions League this year, probably in spite of the players that they've signed recently rather than because of them. So there's going to be a lot to contend with there that summer. Borussia Dortmund equally have huge problems that they'll have to deal with. There's still jury's still out on Edin Terzic as to whether he can, what he'll do. You'd imagine if you're Leverkusen, the best case scenario is that he somehow manages to get Dortmund to the semi-final, and you know Vasco and Co decide to kind of stick around, decide to say, well, he's got to the semi-final, we might as well hold on to him. Leipzig, you know, do seem to be kind of getting better and better. They've kind of now finally kind of gotten over the huge kind of upheaval that happened in the summer, and you know I think Marco Rosa has a decent squad there, but I guess the point I'm making here is you look at those four clubs, and are any of them going to start next season in in better shape than Leverkusen? Are any of them going to start next season with a better head coach, with a better squad? And more likely than not, the answer is no. So, you know, just
I
as...
I think Leipzig, Stefan Leipzig is the one I would watch.
Yeah, absolutely. But it depends who they sell. They obviously... That depends on whether Xabi Simons sticks around. It depends on whether Dani Olmo sticks around. And as I mentioned a few minutes ago, the difference between this Leverkusen team and Leipzig and Dortmund is that they don't pull the trigger on these player sales quite as often as Leipzig do. So that's the conundrum there. And I guess the point I was going to make there was that just as Xabi Alonso in this game of all games decided to rest Florian Wirtz and like because he's like, well, we still have football to play in the Europa League, you're probably thinking, yes, this league title is fantastic, but he's probably already thinking ahead to next season, and he's probably already planning out what this squad will look like next season, because he'll know which players want to stay, he'll know which ones want to go. And the fact that he's decided to stick around is probably a good example. I think it's maybe also quite telling that Nathan Tella has been playing more and more right back, where Frimpong obviously has been played. So maybe Frimpong goes, but the fact that they've already really got a replacement in hand is so impressive. But I guess the point I'm just making is that there's the Champions League by all means, of course, and that's a huge draw for any player. But I think Xabi Alonso will probably be licking his lips at the thought of winning back-to-back league titles next season, as things stand right now.
Yeah, and I mean, that hasn't happened since Dortmund, right? And I think this is a really interesting one too, because I think Leverkusen, in the late 90s and early 2000s, Leverkusen were Bayern's enemy. It's just that they didn't get it across the line, right? And then kind of disappeared for a while. But, because of all the things that I mentioned earlier with the way they're located and the fact that they're in a bit of a quieter place and you can still live in a big city, I think kind of makes them a natural, strong opponent to Bayern Munich in the long term. And that'd be good to see. I think the summer obviously is going to be super fascinating because, like, let's say you sell Frimpong, and you mentioned it, Bailey and Diaby were two players that they sold, and no one shed a tear in Leverkusen because they knew that this was the high point. They wouldn't get any more out of these players, and they had the replacements in hand. The Teller has been such an incredible addition so many times, right? So this season, yeah, I don't think this team is going to be weakened by any means. I actually think, and I mean, I agree with you, it all depends on what Dani Olmo and Harvey Simmons do in the summer. But if those two stay in Leverkusen and in Leipzig, then I think Leipzig and Leverkusen have the two most talented teams in German football. I actually thought, and I actually stick to this, that Leipzig's team this year is more talented than Bayern's team. I just think that the upheaval there was too much form a coherent unit to actually challenge. But they had these moments all season long where they would really, you know, take it to Bayern Munich. They absolutely smashed them in the Super Cup. It's just that they didn't have that consistency yet that you need. You know, consistency develops because, you know, look at this Leverkusen team. It's not the first year that they're together. They were able to go on this run already last year. I mean, you can even say the same about Stuttgart. Why were Stuttgart so good this year? Because they had that run that ultimately got them into the relegation playoffs. But when you look at the table under Hoeneß last season, for example, what were they again? Fourth or sixth under his leadership, right? So you take that momentum into the next year and you already have a unit of players that can play together. And I think Stuttgart only lost Mavropanos last year in the summer, and that's about it. So, you know, you take that momentum. So if Leipzig don't lose their key players and they can build a little bit of momentum at the end of the season, maybe qualify for the Champions League again, I actually think that they would be the biggest challenge next year, which is obviously fascinating because Bayern Munich, I mean, we can probably at some point this week do an entire episode of Bayern Munich. We will, because the Champions League game, obviously. But it is such a weird place right now, and there is a real opportunity here to hurt them for a while and to, you know, make the most of them not being as great of a football power as they were in German football. Kind of liking it to what happened to Juventus in Italy, and see where that league is now at, right? It's in a really healthy place, has far more viewership now in the United States with the Paramount deal. CBS is regularly showing it through that, right? A fallen giant can be a really good thing in the short and medium term, and maybe in the long term too, to put the league into a better financial position. It's interesting and it's exciting.
Can I just make one final point on this, maybe, and then we can maybe wrap up with some listener comments, because we did ask our subscribers to listen to what they thought, and we'll try and read some of them out before we finish. But just as you were talking about Stuttgart there and Leipzig, I do wonder if Stuttgart will kind of look at this season and think and look at what Leverkusen have done, and maybe, and I hope for the sake of the league, that they'll kind of look at it and think maybe we should try not selling all our players, because, you know, you're right in the sense that obviously Mavropanos was the only real big one last season, but over the course of like the 4 years prior to that, they were just a complete kind of fire sale of players year after year. And it was just by chance, actually, I was writing a piece on Atalanta for the transfer market last week, and I noticed that over the course of the last five seasons, Atalanta are ninth for the highest transfer balance in European football in the last 5 years. So what I mean by transfer balance is the amount of money they make from transfers minus the amount of money they spend on transfers. So they have a plus of 152 million. The highest team in Germany over that course are Stuttgart, 136 million, near the 10th highest in Europe. So, to put it bluntly, Stuttgart have been a selling club for the last 5 years. They've made a fortune on selling players, and you know, and that's all fair and good. That's their prerogative. But now that they have a head coach, now they've got a talented squad, you would hope that they would look at what Leverkusen have done this season and think, if we can hold on to these players rather than just cash in on them, maybe we can also do something pretty special next season. And that would be pretty cool.
There's more to come here, you know, looking ahead of what this podcast is doing for the rest of the season. But, you know, I've been talking to Stuttgart a lot. So watch the space. You know, there is upheaval there too with the Porsche takeover, or the takeover of a small percentage of the shares, I should rather say. And then wanting to assert more power over the club, which I personally think is a good thing, because, you know, that will maybe give them the sort of leadership and outside perspective that they have previously been lacking. And that is the majority, I think, of the people in the club want that. But, you know, Stuttgart, that's a club ripe to do something great. That stadium, I watched the Stuttgart-Frankfurt game yesterday, and then I wrote something for Forbes on Stuttgart, because they quite clearly, you know, I've said this many times in the podcast, yesterday I underlined this, that the first 45 minutes were the best 45 minutes I've seen a Bundesliga team play this season, with the exception for maybe the second half Leverkusen put together today. But that stadium now finished is magnificent. You know, what the MHP Arena, previous Mercedes-Benz, or if you want to use the really old Neckarstadion term, right? That stadium is magnificent, and they have this tunnel, the Porsche tunnel, where the fans can sit right up to the players, sort of what you see in the United States, where, you know, the players have to go past the fans to get on the field and all that sort of stuff. It's amazing. The infrastructure is just incredible. And so, you know, they are, I think they're ripe. And, you know, they have made some decisions with these on the sporting side that makes me think that they could pull something similar off. You know, first and foremost, Hoeneß staying is a big signal for the club. And I think Leverkusen has been, we've been waiting over the last 11 years for someone to put out that signal. Hey, you can beat Bayern on your own terms. And it doesn't have to be like Dortmund, you know, where you sell your best players every year and make a lot of money and just hope for the best. There's other models out here that exist to be successful. And I think that's a lot of clubs, you know, you talk to people at Frankfurt, they're like, yeah, we can do this. You talk to people in Stuttgart, they're like, yeah, this is a good example of how it can be done. It kind of, I think it sets a signal around German football, and maybe also will break old trend lines that have been entrenched over the last 11 years. And I think that's why this is so very exciting. Speaking of exciting, our chat, if you're not a subscriber to the Substack chat yet, holy smokes. It's once again completely exploded. I think we got some really cool comments in the Substack chat there, Stefan.
Yeah, ask the subscribers to kind of give us a shout out or to let us know what they think, and we'll try and do a shout out on the show. We've had over 1,030 messages in it today, this weekend rather, for the match day. So I'm trying to scroll down to the part talking about obviously today's game. So just some comments from some of our subscribers. Adam says, you don't have to mention the pod, but I'm just really glad the ESPN did the right thing, stuck around for footage of the celebrations and interviews with the players. I don't know if they've normally done that before with Bayern, but happy did it today. The same sort of thing actually here in the UK. The feed did stick around, and I know it's international feed, but I can't remember who the commentators were, but they did a really good job of just kind of shutting up at times, and they said that themselves, like, let's just keep quiet, let's hear the fans sing, and it was going great until Bayern Leverkusen played Sweet Caroline, which everyone knows is the worst song in the history of humanity. which we also discussed in the subscriber chat. I got a bit of pushback to that, but I'm digging my heels in there.
I'm fully with you. So my favorite hockey team, the Canucks, banned it from the arena, which I think is a good move.
In that case, they're also my favorite hockey team. I'll read in some more comments actually though before we get sidetracked. Tommy says he completely agrees with Adam, so much fun. Nate says, congrats to Leverkusen. Crazy run. I saw them lose to Dortmund and Hoffenheim in August 2022. And to see the Xavi turnaround has been incredible. So two questions. What areas do you think we'll target in the summer? And how will having this exciting team help with new TV deals? Will Apple tackle beat ESPN? We'll probably grab that on a later show, Nate, but thanks for those comments. I'll just
real quick, ESPN is on with the Bundesliga till 2026.
Okay. Skeletor, who I know for a fact is not the original Skeletor, but he says, congratulations, Leverkusen. He's our resident Bayern Munich fan. One of many, actually, but he says, congratulations.
Spoken Bayern fan.
Yeah. Congratulations, Leverkusen. Glad Xavi is staying and building a legacy there. A decade of some great moments for Bayern, from Robin to Lewandowski to Musial as winners. Never know if injuries could have helped keep it closer this year, but Leverkusen are the best team I've ever seen. So it's a big thing from a Bayern fan to say. And Nate says, most fans know that it's not normal to win it that often. It's not healthy for the league. Of course, you're talking about Bayern fans here. Be glad it happened. Enjoy the memories, but it shouldn't be the norm. Tommy asks, if Leverkusen go on a run next year, let's say they win the Bundesliga and or the Champions League, does Xavi stay or go? I'd assume that he would feel he's accomplished everything he could at Leverkusen and move on, but what do I know? And then it looks like they just kind of descended into discussion about where Xabi Alonso could go next. So yeah, just wanted to include some kind of subscriber chat there, because we've had a great time discussing things with them all weekend long. We got into a discussion about the history of Prussia. We talked about craft beer, I believe, the history of craft beer in Germany and France and the United States. Some subscribers discovered that they're actually both live in the same hometown I think the Midwest or something. And of course, we had a debate about whether Neil Diamond is a good singer or not. So lots of football, but it's also a good place to just kind of chew the fat, as we say in my part of the world. And talk some nonsense while the football's on. So big thank you to everyone who subscribes, obviously, because I know you and I have so much fun with it, Manu, don't we?
Oh, I love it. It's been, I've basically, you know, I only go on Twitter or Threads now to post something and leave. Don't engage there anymore, because you always have that one troll that just ruins it for you, and no trolls in that chat. So it's, you know, and people want to be there, and you don't ever get the Farmers League jokes, which I absolutely hate, because there's always that one person on social media that will make it, and it's just the dumbest. I think it's the dumbest thing on the planet, especially on a day where it looks like there's going to be a same Premier League winner, again. So, you know, so you never get that in that chat, and that's great. And yeah, you learn a lot too. You know, that's the other thing, is like sometimes it drifts to cultural things, which is, I think, really lovely, and something that I enjoy. So yeah, it's great. If you haven't been subscribing yet, I urge you to, because it's fun. So yeah, I guess, Stefan, we should probably wrap it up, unless you want to add something else. I guess, well, you know, later this week we'll have lots to discuss, still kind of let it all sink in. We have the Champions League games, so we're going to recap those, so we're going to be able to talk about Bayern and Dortmund and all the implications that will come next for them. Yeah, I guess. Is there anything you want to add before I do the usual spiel?
I think we're good. Yeah, we're just a bit under an hour now, so I think we probably said everything we can. And yeah, we'll pick up a lot more to talk about in this in the episodes to come.
Yeah. Well, first of all, congratulations, Bayer Leverkusen. That is well deserved. It's the most deserved title winner I've seen probably since the Jupp Heynckes and Pep Guardiola time at Bayern. Couldn't have done it in a more dominant fashion. Incredible football. Yeah, congratulations. Herzlichen Glückwunsch zur ersten Meisterschaft. And yeah, as always, the show is brought to you by BetOnline. And we'll be back soon with lots of content. Until then, auf Wiedersehen.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.